Dr. William Luther Pierce on the Texaco Fiasco, 1996.
Hello. There's a very old saying, often attributed to the 5th century B.C. dramatist Euripides, and also to many others over the years, which runs approximately, "Whom the gods would destroy, they first make mad." The reason this saying has endured for so long, I believe, is that it expresses a truth which often has been observed in the lives of men and nations. Death, in the case of an individual, or the loss of physical or political power, in the case of a nation, is preceded by a loss of contact with reality. We might call this loss of contact with reality senility, or as Euripides said, madness. It's a loss of the ability to observe, to reason, and to draw hard-headed conclusions in dealing with the world around us. If Euripides was on target, then the gods have all of their thunderbolts aimed at America today. What could any nation be called other than mad, which twice in a row would choose a creature like Bill Clinton as its president? Perhaps you think I say that just because I regard Bill Clinton the way I would the sort of stinking filth I might have to clean off my boots after a careless walk in a dog kennel. So let's look at another sign of America's national madness that has less to do with presidential politics. Let's look at what might be called the Texaco fiasco. This particular evidence of national madness first came to my attention while I was watching the NBC Evening News a couple of weeks ago. Tom Brokaw, the boyish-looking actor who is paid to mouth the news script for NBC every evening, put on a very stern face and warned parents that what was to follow was shocking and graphic and might not be suitable for children to hear. Of course, I perked up my ears in the hopes of hearing something really titillating. And what we all got, of course, was a noisy, distorted recording of a couple of Texaco executives talking about black jelly beans. And although I couldn't really make it out myself, they used what Brokaw told us in tones of shock and horror was the dread N-word. Well, sir, if it had ended there, this little episode might have been good for a laugh and then been forgotten. But of course, it didn't end there. Brokaw, and I have been told the news actors at the other networks as well, went on and on and on about this bit of idle chatter on the part of a couple of Texaco executives. They treated the matter as if the president of Texaco had been caught sexually abusing little boys in his presidential suite. Well, perhaps that wasn't a good example. I guess pederasts are becoming one of those officially favored minorities about whom one must say nothing disrespectful. If the president of Texaco had been caught boogering little boys, the networks would have taken the attitude that that wasn't really news, and that to report it with a tone of disapproval would have been tantamount to what they like to call homophobia, and which these days is becoming almost as much a sin as using the N-word. Anyway, Brokaw and the other news actors treated the matter as if it were a grave national crisis calling for action of the most drastic sort. They polled people on the street and quoted a few trendy, airheaded women, saying that, yes, they were suitably shocked and horrified, and they intended to sell their stock in Texaco and to buy their gasoline elsewhere in the future. And so, of course, the politicians and the church people began getting into the act and talking about racism and hatred and the need to make everyone understand how hurtful were the things the Texaco executives had been recorded saying. And so then, of course, Jesse Jackson had to get into the act and suggest that it was time for Texaco to pay for using the N-word. Pay with lots of money, that is, or Jesse would organize a boycott of Texaco products. This is the same sort of extortion racket that Jesse and his so-called Rainbow Coalition have worked on dozens of other businesses. Cough up some money, or we'll organize a boycott against you. Now, that would be a felony if you or I tried it, but Jesse has been getting away with it for years. I think it has something to do with his color. The most astounding performance of all was put on by the president of Texaco, Peter Bejour. Instead of telling the media that his employees' private conversations were nobody else's business, and then denouncing the treacherous former employee who had made the surreptitious recording of what should have been a private conversation, he outdid Tom Brokaw at professing his horror and shock over the discovery that anyone at Texaco had ever had a politically incorrect thought. He practically rent his garments and beat his breast in his expression of repentance for the white guilt of Texaco executives. It was embarrassing to watch him. Finally, he promised to cough up $176 million to placate Jesse Jackson and Texaco's offended black employees. Now, Texaco is a big and very successful company. I can only assume that the people who run the company are not idiots. But if Peter Bejour is not an idiot, then he is a crook, a man without scruple or principle who will do anything, no matter how dishonest or treacherous, in order to keep his job. I say that because if he is as smart as I think he is, then he certainly could see through Tom Brokaw's act and understand what is behind it. He must understand that the whole pretense of shock and horror by the controlled media is part of a deliberate conditioning effort aimed at establishing a conditioned reflex against so-called racism in the more suggestible and easily manipulated segments of the population, and intimidating the more independent-minded segments into going along with the mob. We're all supposed to be horrified, or at least pretend to be horrified, that anyone at Texaco would use the N-word, even in a private conversation. We're all supposed to side with Jesse Jackson in a crusade to punish Texaco for having executives who joke with each other about black jelly beans. Those of us who can't simply close our eyes to reality and actually think whatever thoughts are fashionable at the moment, no matter how much at odds with the facts they are supposed to be afraid to tell a joke about blacks or to use the N-word even in a private conversation because someone might be secretly recording our remarks, in which case we'll be fired by our employers, have our homes and cars repossessed, and be shunned by all right-thinking members of society. That's the sort of conditioned reflex Tom Brokaw and the other media actors, following the policies of the media bosses, were trying to implant in us with their big hullabaloo about black jelly beans at Texaco. And Texaco's boss made a conscious decision to go along with this attempt to control the minds of his fellow Americans. He decided to collaborate rather than fight, because he figured that if he went up against the Jewish media bosses, the fight would become too expensive, even for Texaco. Actually, Peter Bejour and corporate America generally made this decision to collaborate with the Jews a long time ago. The campaign by the media bosses to control the thinking and behavior of Americans has been going on ever since the Jews began establishing their stranglehold on the mass media more than 60 years ago. The Texaco hullabaloo was only one small event in that continuing campaign. Over the years, a few of the big corporation bosses refused to go along with them, but only a few. Henry Ford Sr. was one example. Most of the big capitalists put their profits ahead of everything else. They decided that it would not be profitable to get on the wrong side of the Jews, and so they collaborated with them, either actively or passively, regardless of the consequences for America and for our people. Peter Bejour and the other big corporation bosses are intelligent enough to understand the general sort of damage to a people and a nation that must follow from permitting a small alien minority to brainwash the public, to control the minds of its more suggestible elements, to shape public opinion, and to exercise a correspondingly powerful influence over governmental policy. Yes, they have subtle enough minds to understand these things in a general way. But for those who need very specific examples in order to grasp the significance of this sort of mind control exercised by the media, I'll give a very specific example. Think for a moment about the current uproar in our army as a result of the revelations about the wide-scale rape of female soldiers by drill instructors and officers at Aberdeen Proving Ground and other bases. This is really a shameful and intolerable situation. It is totally different from the drunken party a few years ago at Las Vegas by Navy flyers, the so-called tailhook scandal, in which some women who attended the party were fondled and subjected to other indignities. The tailhook association parties were well known among Navy people as drunken orgies, and all the women who attended did so voluntarily. The tailhook behavior was certainly nothing to be proud of, but it did not involve rape or coercion. In the Army, on the other hand, female soldiers have been subjected to systematic sexual harassment, not at drunken parties they attended voluntarily, but in connection with their military training, and many actually have been raped. Drill instructors and officers came into their barracks, grabbed them, dragged them into the bathrooms, and forcibly raped them, then threatened to cut their throats if they told anyone. This sort of thing happened not just once, but many times. It was a systematic thing, and it is absolutely intolerable that we should have such a situation in the U.S. Army. When the news finally broke a couple of weeks ago about what was happening to women recruits in the Army, the question which naturally arose was, Why wasn't something done to stop the rapes a long time ago? Why did the army brass tolerate this behavior for so long? Amazingly, the answer to this question was provided by Time magazine in a November 25th news story on the army rapes. The army had been investigating the situation for some time, but was moving very slowly and very cautiously, according to the Time story. And why was the army cautiously sitting on its hands and doing nothing to stop the rapes it knew were happening? The reason, according to Time, was that most of the rapists were black drill instructors and black officers, and most of the women being raped were white recruits. The army brass were afraid that if they moved against the black rapists, they would be accused of racism. The implication of this Time magazine story was that if the rapists had been white, the army would have moved against them instantly and stopped the rapes. But because most of them were black, the army leaders were afraid to take action. And why were they afraid to take action? Because of the sort of brainwashing campaign that the controlled media have been engaged in for so long. A campaign to make people fear being accused of racism more than anything else. To make them fear that an accusation of racism will cost them their careers and ruin their lives, whether or not there is any substance to the accusation. It is this campaign by the controlled media to develop a Pavlovian reflex in the American public so that they will be afraid to criticize blacks, which kept the army from moving against its black rapists. And it is the same campaign which led so many of the white women in the army to become rape victims. They were easy targets for the black rapists because they all had been subjected themselves to a brainwashing campaign that conditioned them to be especially receptive to blacks. A campaign which cleverly insinuated the idea into their minds that there's nothing inherently wrong with interracial sex, that sex with a black man is somehow more progressive, more tolerant, more politically correct than sex with a man of their own race, that to reject a black man might be interpreted as an expression of racism. We've all seen this propaganda 1,000 times in the mass media. All of the new films and television shows are full of it. I'll go a bit further. This same Jewish media brainwashing campaign has been responsible for putting blacks into positions of authority over whites in our armed forces. That's something we never had until after the Second World War. And it has been responsible for removing the protections that we once gave to our women. This Jewish media campaign is behind the move to mix women with men in every military role, including combat, and to treat them just like men. It's a campaign to persuade us to ignore reality and to pretend that the world is not what we know it to be, but instead to try to make it conform to some lunatic model of political correctness in which everyone is equal, men and women, blacks and whites, and we all think and behave the same way. This campaign is destroying our society, destroying our country, destroying our people. And it is this campaign which the chairman of Texaco chose to collaborate with rather than risk a fight with the Jewish media bosses. Now that is truly shameful. 20 years ago, I wrote a political novel, The Turner Diaries, in which I predicted situations that we're seeing all around us today, but which seemed wildly fantastic to most people at the time I wrote about them in the 1970s. I looked at the policies being pushed by the Jewish media bosses at that time. I looked at the directions in which those policies were leading us, and I extrapolated 20 years ahead. I not only predicted greater governmental intrusions into the lives of our people and governmental efforts to take away our freedom of speech and our freedom to keep and bear arms, I predicted the advent of domestic terrorism in the United States in response to this governmental repression. And I also predicted the fate of our women as the government moved to enforce a Jewish concept of equality on all of us. I predicted a great increase in the incidence of rape, and I specifically forecast the rape of white women by black soldiers and the unwillingness of the army brass to deal with this situation. I am horrified to see this scenario I imagined 20 years ago as fiction becoming reality today. And I believe it goes without saying that I am not horrified at all by talk of black jelly beans or the use of the N-word by Texaco executives. But I am horrified when men in positions of power and authority, men like Texaco boss Peter Bejour, choose to collaborate with those who are destroying America, choose to collaborate with those whose propaganda campaign has led to the systematic raping of our young women in the army, rather than take a forthright and honest stand against this destructive campaign and the evil creatures behind it. You know, there are plenty of idiots in this country who can't figure these things out. Idiots who believe that the really big problem we have to solve in this country is learning to be one big happy family, blacks and whites, Jews and Arabs, homosexual activists and normal people, mestizos and Vietnamese immigrants, and those of us whose ancestors came from Europe and built a new civilization here. They wring their hands and think, oh, if we could just get along peacefully with each other. And they believe that we must be very careful what we say, very careful never to give offense, very careful never to use the N-word. And then maybe all of those people who are so different from us will come to like us, and we will somehow be able to live together without violence and hatred. The idiots believe that, but the big corporate bosses like Mr. Bejour certainly don't. They have a little better grip on reality than the idiots do. They understand that if they tried to run their corporations that way, they would become snack food for the ones who play by rougher rules. The army brass understand that too. And both the corporate bosses and the army's generals understand that when you have something that someone else is determined to take away from you, in this case, our country, our civilization, you don't get him to change his mind by trying hard not to offend him, by being careful never to use the N-word. Yes, the generals and the bosses understand this, but they don't really care. What happens to the country is not important to them. What happens to our people is not important. The only thing that's important is their careers. And we tolerate people with these attitudes, with these values, as the leaders of our society. That, too, is a part of America's madness. Thanks for being with me today.